Collide. This is a show where the sacred and profane collide. You got some hosts here. One of them is the Ross Engel.
Hey, everybody. How you doing today?
You added the finger. The
finger guns. Huh? Yeah.
Paul Koch.
Yes, get going.
And myself, Joel Hess. Tyler, the intern.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, guys.
So that's really what you're running with? That's it.
That's four in a row.
That's it. Right. That's you.
Yeah, that's him now.
Yeah. That's my thing.
We got a guest female. I don't know what that means. Meet her quotas. 15, 17 told us we had to have a female on once every five episodes. So we only know one. That is Cindy Koch. I will say this, Cindy, I think that you are, I might be wrong, the only woman that's been on ringside. Am I wrong on that? I think.
Well, you know, Julie used to call during episodes. You take Julie's phone
calls. Julie used to call during the episode every time. Yes.
You should do that. That'd be fun.
Was Veronica Krogan ever in the background of one?
She might have been in the background.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, see,
so Veronica, shout out. Not the only one.
You have fans, you have listeners. Better female. It's all right.
But the finale is Tyler's mom. She's been on in the background, like vacuuming. Yep. So Cindy, it's good to have you on. Give us a unique female perspective, whatever that means. Inspiring Jesus worship. People think they go to church to get Jesus excited about being Jesus. Any thoughts on that?
It's just the most ridiculous. Like,
am I right though?
We gotta get Jesus excited. Come on, Jesus. To be Jesus.
You're the guy. Don't get down.
Wasn't that the whole format for like
we're
contemporary
really
worship,
this
right?
Time.
We gotta wake
this
God up to get him to do what we need him. Yeah. Keep up the good work, Lord.
We love you, Jesus,
keep
man.
It up,
you're awesome.
Jesus.
Turn that frown upside down. Do your thing.
Yeah.
If your church sounds like that, you go in the wrong church.
Yeah, go to a new church.
All right. Jesus doesn't need to. Like I said, I don't know if I've said it before.
Jesus
we got
needs
a big
an
statue.
Attaboy from us.
We that's right. Who's the greatest in the town? Jesus is.
It's like a South Park episode, right? Like where Jesus is singing happy birthday to him. Happy birthday to me. And he's like all
is
depressed.
That true?
Yeah.
Is it actually occur? Okay. All right. I would guess South Park probably beat us to the mocking of Christianity situation or bad Christians. So yeah, we're in the middle of Lent and I don't know. There's really nothing to talk about. You know, we're just kind of trudging along here on our 40-day Jesus journey with Jesus. Anything exciting going on in your world, Lenten world? What are you guys doing for Lent? So I'm doing God's Gear for survival. It sounds like a VBS theme. I apologize, but God gives us clear. What's that?
Sounds like it's something you wrote for like Lutheran Hour Ministries.
It does.
Like
I know.
Network.
I know.
It sounds like a portal of prayers type thing, right? God's gear. He's got six gears. One gear each week.
Oh,
first gear.
I wasn't thinking gear like that. I was thinking like a to go bag. You know, like your
that's what
bag.
I'm absolutely talking about to go bag.
The go bag.
You know what? What are we talking about?
So it's been a fun run, guys.
I'm doing the means of grace and prayer. Quite frankly, I always do the means. I always go through like the catechism in some other different way every time for Lent. What are you guys doing? Ross, what are you doing?
We are going through the book of James.
Restore the roar.
And yeah, restore the roar. No, we're actually, I got a good deal on Bob's book, Finding Christ in the Straw. And so I gave a book to every family in the church and we're going through the book of James together.
What do you got, Paul?
We're going to talk about Jesus.
Woo!
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a novel
every
concept.
Sunday, every Wednesday?
Yeah, every Wednesday. Wednesday. Yeah.
Tyler, you guys are still in Christmas, celebrating Christmas series.
Yeah, we're celebrating Epiphany this upcoming week.
You're doing 6 weeks to a better marriage there or something? Like,
no, but I do think that our pastors listen to this show because they're preaching about lamenting and what that actually means in today's society, which we talked about last week.
They give us a
French word.
Give us a footnote or anything? Do they mention us?
What do you got? Yeah, because
I'm going to have to make mention sure us. They do. They
if you talk about lamenting within this time period, you need to probably mention us or else you're kind of stealing the word lament.
This Ringside University seriously has to happen.
That's what I mean.
Because
you guys are
impacting congregations like you don't even know.
We do. Impacting like a impacting congregations, like a tooth.
Yeah.
A tooth decay.
Like that movie right. from the 90s, right? It. Deep Impact.
Where Deep Impact.
The asteroid comes down and kills everybody except for Darth Vader's mother.
Good.
Or
okay.
Like,
we're gonna run with this. Yeah. This is good.
Did you say Darth Vader's mother?
I guess it wasn't Darth Vader's mother. That was Luke Skywalker's mother, right?
No, Natalie Darth Vader's mother is Martha Vader. Is Martha Vader, I think.
I thought it was Ruth Vader.
Ruth Vader. Oh, that's good.
All right. Oh. Fine graduate of Ringside University right there. Tyler Osmond. We need to do something with that. Sitting in your spare time. Yeah. Ringside University is something to throw together, though. Don't you think?
Yeah, we're gonna make.
We've been.
It's gonna happen. About
that. Can we have like a community college too for the non-pastor? We could have like a Ringside Community College and then Ringside University for those whose scores just weren't good enough to get in.
I think Ringside Community College is all we.
That's
need.
What we should call
Let's
it.
Just, that's all.
That's all we should call that's it. That's even better.
You know, like a whole bunch of broken down Trans Ams and Marlboro Reds out in the parking lot and.
That's
might
right.
be a bottle of old granddad.
It's just the thinking fellows with cigarettes.
No, the thinking fellows roll their own cigarettes, don't they? Sit there with her.
No. They're not smoking cigarette. They've probably never seen a cigarette before, by the way. Anyhow, my son went to the community college here in Chicago, and it's everything you imagine. The clientele coming to community college.
Like Chicago community college.
Chicago. All right. Well, we did Lent quite a good there. Hope you guys out there listening are getting some good Lent in, whatever that means.
Get after and, that Lenting.
Some good
one. gotta get my Lent on.
That's right.
All right.
Lent till tomorrow.
Are we sponsored by anybody, Tyler?
Yeah, we are.
Sweet.
Once again, we are brought to you by the Concordia Seminary St. Louis. Concordia Seminary St. Louis provides continuing education and catechetical resources for church workers and lay members to foster lifelong growth in faith, discipleship, and skill for life in church and the world. For information, please visit us on the web at csl.edu. Christ-centered, biblically sound, mission-focused since 1839, this is Concordia Seminary St. Louis. Providing workers for the church through 10 degree and distance learning programs and serving as a center for theological research. There's that thing again, scholarship and continuing education of the clergy.
All right.
Theological research.
What do you mean that's it? That's a lot.
That's how we pay the bills. Our bills aren't that
high.
Funny
if you just start making up dates and everything
so
and see what happens. We got 10 different cooking classes.
Concordia Seminary St. Louis invented in 1997.
All right, we got some topics. Online. Are we gonna get the bell going? Are we gonna stay
gonna
the bell
the
this
bell
time,
again?
Or what do you want to do? We stick with it.
I did get a message the other day. Someone was listening, and they said when we were talking about grief and mourning, they wished that the bell had been just a little bit delayed because they felt like we were getting onto some good stuff.
That's the whole
the
point.
Bell interrupted
that's
it.
The point.
I know it's the point.
So they'll have to listen again next
that's
time you talk about it.
Next time we talk
don't
about
morning. Don't think we're ever going to. You think that we remember what we talked about the last episode and we're going to continue it?
Dude, when I read Mercedes' article each week about what we talked about the week before, it's like a whole new thing. Like, we talked about that? Like, that's great. Yeah.
She makes us look good. Let's be honest.
She does.
I actually agree with you. I agree with you, Ross. I look at it like, what?
I'm like, wow.
She got that out of
that? She got that out of that? Wow.
She took an hour-long episode and wrote a 45-word paragraph about us? That's pretty impressive.
That's impressive.
She always makes it sound so good. By the way, check it out.
TheJaggedWord.com, which is still putting out some good content.
That's right.
Twice a day, I would say, right?
Jagged Words.
Doing well.
Yeah.
Puts
weekly
out
recaps
really well.
Of our episodes.
Good, good one. Paul, let's hit yours right now. I didn't have in our topics here, but today you wrote my church and these divisions that you were these. And I think you were kind of trying to be. I know where you think, though, like everyone's coming from different. Everybody comes from different places and you're kind of giving them all credit. But there's a sense of everyone having certain demands and we might have made it worse during COVID while trying to be creative. But your fear is that maybe which I think we already were scattered with our, you know, contemporary and traditional and mocha.
Yeah.
Stuff. What do you think?
Yeah. So I think that, I think what we're seeing as we're kind of coming through now, the pandemic and people are trying to figure out what's happening now. What's the church kind of looking like? I think that fracturing of the church is going to be even more now than it was. And because people are going to have a hard time. So if you went to the live stream, if that became like an essential piece, which for, I think the vast majority of churches it did, this became church. I think it's a very difficult thing to undo that, to make it not an essential part of the church anymore. Which now creates whole new realities for your congregation. So people will say, well, this is my church, right? But what they really want is they may not have graced the door of that church in a year and a half now or longer, you know, whatever it is. But it's still, that's my church. They don't know the people there. They don't sit next to them. They don't, sing the hymns with them. It's a very fractured thing. There's a church nearby me, and I was talking with them just the other day, and they have in-person worship, like kind of like my congregation does, where it's just
no normal. Mass, you said.
Yeah, no mass. Like, we don't, our church. Yeah, whatever. And then they have an outdoor area where they got TVs set up. So they're at church, but they're sitting outside and they're going through that. And then, so I imagine they can still kind of come in for communion, or maybe they bring communion out then. Then they have a whole separate section where it's still piped in with the screens, but they're whole inside mass. Because sometimes it's the weather's not nice, but they're all masked in there and they're all socially like, so it's like, if you're going to go in there, it's because you want to wear a mask and everyone wants to wear a mask and this, that. Then they have it streaming online. So you basically now have four churches all operating. Right. And that's a different thing. Mm. You know, it's a whole different world. And I think our individualism and consumer mentality in our country will not, this will be relentless, and it's just going to become more and more and more and more. So that, I think we got to, I don't know, maybe you got to just call that out, or I don't know how we go forward with that, but it's a real reality.
Yeah. We're going to end up with different congregations. Essentially, each one of those is going to be its own kind of church
experience
with its own culture. Yeah. And they'll be loosely affiliated with each other. But ultimately, I mean, it's like the difference between if you've got an 8 o'clock service and a 10:30 service, like we have, people don't know each other necessarily. And I mean, they do, but you know, at one point this church had a Saturday night contemporary service, and that was a completely different animal where, you know, those folks didn't know any of the Sunday folks. You end up with three different churches.
So for things like, at what point do you just say, listen, we're cutting our live stream?
Yeah,
church is the gathering of the people of God. You got to come here. That's whatever you're doing at home. That's not church. So you gotta come back. That's a hard discussion to have. I don't know how they'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't logically quite say that, because you've got shut-ins. You can't tell a shut-in that's not church.
Yeah, they have to be there. Because that's why you go visit them as a pastor.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. You're visiting,
bringing the church to them. Whatever they're doing online.
Well, they're doing something online. That's
not church.
Yeah.
But it's not church.
No.
Some of it's all laziness, components, right? Like,
yes. I don't think you're simply saying, you can't simply say it's valueless. You also can't say, I'm going to allow the healthy valuable. Family.
I didn't say valuable. I'm saying it's not church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's ultimately, I think it can be a part of that, but if you're not leaning toward coming in person, then you're creating a wrong culture of what it means to be church.
Yeah.
I totally agree. The shut-in is of course exceptional. They cannot come. It'd be great if we could stream just to them, right? If you could stream just to them, right?
Yeah.
And so they can see in service and participate, and then you come with communion.
Yeah.
Then that makes sense. But I think let's begin with the obvious biggest fears. A healthy family is too lazy to come in person, and they get used to it and they become complacent with that.
Right.
To me, that is our hugest, and they equate that with church. I think that's absolutely dangerous and is a problem that we're looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do from there? Yeah. And so I'm starting to bring down the law like a little bit, like it starts once things become even obviously more healthier, it's going to be like, listen, if you're sitting at home, you could be here. You got a problem. Yeah. At some point, that's what pastors need to start saying. I don't know what it means about stopping stream or whatever, but I think it is. I think it's a challenge, though. I'm hearing it right now. Yeah. People getting in bad habits. It's creating some bad habits.
Well, you know, you got people that are willing to go to all these other places, right? But not church. Like, they'll go to the gym and work out. They'll go to the movie theater and watch a movie. They'll travel. Yeah. I got a couple. They've gone to Disney for an 8-day little getaway, but they still have to come to a private service thing because they don't want to come to church yet. I'm like, you can go to friggin' Disney.
This is
just laziness now. This is fear. This is a whole bunch. I mean, it's frustrating, you know, or the people that can get up and go run in a marathon or go to the gym every day and work out and post selfies at the gym, but they can't get their butt to church on Sunday because we don't have a mask mandate. So nobody's wearing masks. Well, you're not wearing a mask when you're running with all those people breathing heavy around you or working out breathing heavy.
I think you guys are having the right discussion. There's a good Jagged Word article coming out in like an hour. You don't know it. I'm the only one that got to read it yet. It's Caleb Waite is one of our new authors, and he wrote a really great one called Confessions of a Pandemic Pastor. And it's all of this stuff where it's like you're trying to do the best for your congregation and it looks different in every place, but yet there's still this like truth that you're trying to hold on to and communicate to your people in your particular situation. And so, I mean, to hear you guys like just debate with each other about what the answer is, I think that's kind of important for people to hear that maybe there's just not one path through this, but what's the really important part? Like, what is church? What are we doing? What are we encouraging?
So I think it was a while ago that we talked about this on the show, but I think it was Paul that brought up, There was a church that you had contact with, I think, that had like a really big like kids church program. And it was all about how like during the service, the kids would go out and they do their own thing and everything. And then you asked the question of, well, when they're ready to join the real church, what's your plan for
your plan?
How do you acclimate them? So I don't think there's necessarily something wrong with doing the multiple different facets of church.
The reality, though, Tyler,
you need to have a plan.
That pastor had no plan, and nobody who does kids church actually has a plan.
Yeah,
exactly. But and that's what I mean is that it's okay to do that, but you need to have the plan. Like our church,
it is. It's just a bad church thing. Has been, like, kids aren't going to learn to go to church by sitting in not church, right? Like,
you got a good point. You need a plan if you're doing this. Right, you have to have a plan. What's the exit strategy to get back?
Our church has been a little bit more conservative than your guys's. But since this whole thing started, we've been doing a pre-produced service. It's not a live stream of the church. It's a totally separate thing. And the one thing about that is that our pastors from the beginning have said, we don't want to get people too comfortable to where they feel like they're getting the same thing at home. And so they do have the ability to ripcord on that. I think that I don't know if they haven't fully thought out of when that's going to happen, but from the beginning, our idea is we don't want to get too good at this virtual church thing because we don't want people to enjoy it. We don't want people to like sitting in their living rooms on Sundays and doing that.
I remember Tim Barquette would say when they first started live streaming there, his members were like, well, we're going to get these new cameras and we're going to do this. And Barquette was like, no. You use the crappy webcam that we've been using before.
So sucks.
Like, so it's terrible. Mm-hmm. Like, you can do it, but it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
and that was the point. The point was like, because we don't want you. This isn't going to be some well-produced thing for you to sit at home and enjoy. Like,
Yeah.
You know, it's a Band-Aid to get you through.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's a tough thing because every time I talk about pulling the cord and us stopping, people are like, but Pastor, there's people that aren't part of our church that are watching this and it might be an opportunity for folks that don't come to church to hear the gospel. And I'm like, that's not though. And
it absolutely is. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
I literally have.
Well, no, Ross, your church is the only online resource out there for people. Like, if you take away their resource, they won't
I would say
we're trying to motivate Jesus.
It does work. It does work. It does bring people in. I have people coming in person all the time through introducing it through the live stream. But that was a unique time of COVID. So they had no other choice. It happens all the time. People right. doing that, or families gathering and having church when, and that's, again, that's a unique, unusual time, exceptional time. No one's going to church. And so the daughter who's living in town, her mom is living, you know, somewhere else in the country, and they're watching the same service, and it's been a blessing. The key is, and it brings and it grows to the church. And I also very confidently believe most people actually like to be in person. It's been my experience. So I don't think it's as much of an obstacle as we invent. In my world, people want to be physically in person. They desire it. Now, I do think, not always, and I think there can be a problem. And I also think that if a church doesn't talk in their vocabulary frequently about in-person communions every Sunday, like that's the best thing to do, then I think indeed people can, I think it's the worship, the goal of worship. I think that we can send the wrong message if we're not constantly reiterating that. I think that's the danger. And what you'll see is, I think people that aren't communion people or real presence, like the church is the real presence, the communion is real presence, we're going to see in those theologies, it's going to branch out. If you don't think communion is a big deal, if you think church is entertainment, you know, all those sort of things, then those church bodies, I know church bodies still, churches still that are not in person.
Yeah, right.
And they seem absolutely fine with it. Because in a sense, that's how they were in the first place. They weren't personable anyways. It was a big building. You go in. There's literally a church right down. Still, it is still shut down. It's all online. It's a gigantic church. Cool thing is I'm gaining people from that because they're not meeting yeah. anymore. So I actually do think people like to meet in person. And I think it's a hard decision. Or it's a hard goal. What do you do? And I think Paul's right that right or wrong, we have created these problems out of this, and now we need to get out of it somehow so people are coming in person. So did the bell ring?
Yeah. Wow.
Whoa. All right. Next topic is I say that after I talk. Next topic is Paul, do you something happen on Facebook? Do you want to talk about this peculiar? I think so.
It's the Paul show.
You got a hot topic here. Let's keep on going to the online situation.
That's a Paul cast. Okay,
So we had a member of our church who they haven't been here at all, the whole COVID at all. And they've been very upset because we have not followed CDC guidelines, our governor's guidelines, our any guidelines really. So we kind of,
are there guidelines?
Oh, your governor didn't even follow your governor's guidelines.
Yeah. So anyway, but very upset, and they feel, you know, left out and hurt. And there's a lot to that for sure. And that, you know, to care for them. Anyway, they decided to voice their dismay and their anger and all that very publicly, I guess, on Facebook. Now, as you guys know, I don't have Facebook. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea. So it's always,
first of all, though, Paul, that sounds like the correct forum that you should vent your problems with. So I think so far this all sounds good. So yeah. What's the no? Okay, go.
So right. So they vented their frustrations with the church very publicly, and I guess there was a lot of a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon, lots of wonderful virtue signaling, and everyone's patting you on the back, whatever. So I get a text from a buddy of mine who's a pastor here in town. And he said, it was like, man, do you have Facebook? I was like, no, you know, I don't have that. It's like, oh, so-and-so said, is saying all this stuff about your church in a very public format. And I said to him, I said, well, what the hell did you say? Like, what was your response? No. And he's like, well, I just wanted you to know, man, it's your deal. And I said, listen, weird. I'm not there. Like, I'm not on Facebook, so I have no idea, right? So, and I told him, I said, if somebody was in a format that I'm a part of and they're talking bad about you or your congregation, I'm pretty sure the Eighth Commandment calls for me to at least put the best construction on what you're doing, right? And to protect your reputation in that format. Like, that's what we're called to do. And it's like, and it got really heated, and I actually haven't talked to him since. So I don't know. I might have.
Now he's probably on Facebook talking about how Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. It's like, that guy is an asshole. So,
you know, he was telling me, so I want to tell you that I didn't say anything because it's not my thing.
But I kept thinking about it afterwards, and I thought, with him, it just like, I was kind of pissed, I guess, about other things. So it hit me at a bad time or whatever. But why do we just let this go? Like, and I'm going to bring it up to my members too, is, you know, if people say like you're in that format, like you should be defending your brothers and sisters in Christ. You should at least be speaking well of them. Like, don't just be silent. Oh my gosh. Can you believe that? So-and-so, like, first of all, what the hell are we afraid of? Like, what are they going to do to us?
That's really weird.
And then just, you know, speak the truth. And, so anyway, that was my thought. Like, do you think, like we should sort of push that a bit? Like, people have a duty,
to what?
A responsibility to defend the, reputation of their brother or sister in Christ.
Mm-hmm. No. Yes. I mean, that's absolutely. Yeah.
So absolutely. You guys all have Facebook. Do you do that?
Hell no.
No,
that's their deal.
I remember.
I've never had anything. I don't think I've ever had anything like that happen besides gigantic political, you know, people bitching about political things, you know, but I don't think I've ever had anything like that happen. That being said, the reason why Paul, if people are listening right now, they're like, oh my gosh, someone's talking terribly about Paul's church. Like, if you're a pastor for like 2 years, you're immediately absolutely numb to people saying bad things about it. Somebody doesn't like you and doesn't like the church. Right, Paul? Yeah. I mean, it's like, annoying that it's out there, but it's like, get in line, you know, that's life. So, you know, that's outrageous.
Still hurts sometimes.
Oh, you know what? It does still hurt. Absolutely. Ross, what you got?
Well, Tyler, yeah, I was thinking, you know, that is the role. I mean, if you step in to defend yourself, it sometimes looks a little weak, right? But that's why we have a family of believers. That's why we have, you know, a perimeter of who's us and who's not us, so that, you know, we can defend each other and speak well of each other. And I think there is a role of that. I know when we first started getting pushback on the Jagged Word stuff, I always took it kind of personal when someone attacked you guys for something you wrote, much more than when someone would attack me for something I wrote.
Right.
And so I always felt, you know, like, personally, it was my duty to defend, you know, my brothers against, you know, these idiots that would, you know, try and talk crap about us.
Mailing them bags of genitalia,
right.
Which you did often. Anyway, yeah. So,
the exploding glitter and the.
That was a constant phrase of yours for a while.
It was, right? Eat a bag of. Yeah. But yeah, we really got to go back to that, I suppose. Back in the heydays.
I didn't know it existed. There's actually companies that sell bags of gummy
phalanges, you know,
things.
Yeah. I think far more likely especially in today's Facebook world, unfortunately, it is much more likely for someone to join in from, like, say, from the church perspective. If someone is online bad mouthing the church or the pastor, it's far more likely that someone else from the church will jump on and do the same rather than someone to jump on and defend it. Right. Like I've got a couple members in the church that I know that they get together with people that used to go here and, gossip and speak badly about the church and me and stuff like that.
What are they doing?
And it's like, you know, maybe you should actually defend the church to these people that speak poorly of us. Or if you're going to continue to hang out with people that speak poorly of us, then maybe you should leave and not be a part of us if you don't have anything good to say about, you know, your church or your pastor or whatever. I joked about it at my last church council meeting that maybe what I need to start doing is show up at elders meeting with pre-signed peaceful release letters that all I have to do is just fill in their name. And then just like, you don't want to sign up. You don't want to volunteer. You want to talk bad. Here's your peaceful release. You can fill in your name, whatever congregation you want to go to. It's fine. Just let me know. You know,
I don't know if all these people are looking for like a rational discussion though. They kind of want somebody to fight back.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, it's Facebook. And so what are you going to do? What are you going to say? Cause they want to fight. Mm-hmm. And so anybody from the church that would go on there and, you know, say something. Yeah, of course we should defend our brothers and sisters in Christ. Of course we should. But what could you say that would be productive?
I mean, I think
come sit it's to me.
Is it a point of being productive?
Yeah, we're not trying to convince. We're just trying to have another voice say, hey, stop talking about this on Facebook. I think that says a lot. We're not talking about an arguing a point, you know, and going on. I think what Paul's saying, I think what we need to do more of, not just here, but in life in general, is stand up for, first of all, it come across a lot better. Instead of Paul arguing against this person that's mad, if a brother actually said, hey, this is the wrong format, not even arguing it wrong, right or wrong.
Right.
That's, we don't have that at all. I did a speech for young men, a couple young men yesterday who got in trouble here in our school. And I said, you want to be a man or a weasel? And we talked about exactly that. There's a couple guys got in trouble because they did something wrong. But I actually said, the people that watched it happen or laughed at your buddy is kind of picking on this kid, you guys are the weasels, you know, far more than the person that actually was complaining. This pastor is the weasel. He's the problem. The person complaining about your church, they're a confused sinner. This guy is a wolf and sheep's in
the, he's snake not a sheep in the
grass. You know, this guy's a wolf. He's dangerous. And that's what's probably, I think, is the general problem overall, is not speaking up for people or doing something or fighting. Yeah. When you see someone else getting hurt or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of why I stopped going to Winkle's church, you know, the circuit pastor gatherings, because, you know, there isn't that brotherhood. You know, they're snakes in the grass that when members show up from this church at theirs, rather than saying, you got to go back and reconcile, they're like, hey, we'll be glad to take you in as member. Stuff you don't have to go reconcile there. And so why would I go hang out with the snakes in the grass, the wolves in sheep's clothing? And I'll take care of my own. And I'll hang out with you guys instead on Thursdays instead of go hang out with wolves in sheep's clothing. Hang out with my sheepdog brothers.
No bell.
I already
heard that one. Keep on going.
Like, there's got to be a bell.
Dang, did you not hear it?
Someone needs to. I'm not hearing anything.
Yeah, ring that bell louder.
Ring my bell. I apologize.
I don't think that's the issue.
Probably not.
Let's go on to the next. That's terrible. Okay, sorry. Okay, so recently been an article by evangelical Christians, either writing a letter or something and telling Christians, you know, watch out for Christian nationalists. Have you heard that? Christian nationalists. There's a rise of Christian nationalists, which I think is code word for people that don't agree with. I mean, I think there is a problem with Christian nationalists, but I think it's also grouped into people that don't agree with Biden must be a Christian nationalist, or people that voted for Trump or think that he might have got screwed over must be a Christian nationalist. What you guys read about that at all? Have you seen that at all? Or you know what I'm talking about?
Nope.
Christian nationalism. So you're a Christian who kind of maybe equates America's destiny. You're very hot about America's destiny, and you sort of combine the two, Jesus, church's destiny with America's destiny. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
Is there a danger of that? Is there a danger of and you see this in posts, you know, of pastors that just are doing large rampages about taxes, you know, as opposed to, you know, Jesus or whatever. Any thoughts on that? Or is that old? Maybe that's old.
This is nothing new.
It's a new...
No, it's not.
The new thing is Christianity Day and these other evangelical leaders are standing up and saying we need to get rid of or watch out for Christian nationalists. But it isn't anything new. Why are we talking about this?
You brought it up.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, hey, good bell.
We heard that one.
I will say in the LCMS, there's a frighteningly increasing amount of people that are absolutely not understanding the difference between church and the left and right hand kingdom.
Yeah.
All right. Next. I mean, it's getting a little.
Don't we have a whole center that's got that whole thing confused?
What am I talking about? We have an actual center, the Center for Religious Liberty, which is nowhere in the Bible. Not one place in the Bible does it talk about. In fact, God is against religious liberty. Please repeat that to friends that you have. All right. Next topic here. Just with my grab bag, put my hand in the grab bag.
Your overnight bag?
What we got here. What's that?
Your overnight bag?
His salute case.
That's what it's called. The overnight bag. looking for a pastor. You're going to call a pastor. We're calling an associate pastor here. But you're a church looking for a pastor. What are you looking for? What should people out there be like? They're in a call process. I bet there's people out there listening that are on a call committee. What should they be looking for? What should they not be? What's some code words for things they shouldn't be looking for? Ross, what do you got there?
Some. You know, it's
come on, Ross.
I think call committees often ask questions that, you know, there's been a few questions I've been asked over the years in interviews where I scratch my head. I'm like, obviously they're asking this question because they've had either a bad experience with it or they've got an axe to grind. You know, I mean,
I just real quick. I've realized that just talking about our own situation or whatever, every call committee questioning that I went gone through, almost maybe 100%, the questions are absolutely irrelevant to what they should be looking for or anything that had anything to do with picking me.
Yeah.
Like, questions that are either like an obvious answer, you believe in Jesus, your service. I don't know. Not one time, I don't think ever, this congregation here included, were there a bunch of questions where it's like, oh, that really helped sort out something. Mm-hmm. It might help sort out like the human being. Like I like that person, the way they sort of talk, but the actual questions, I don't know who's in charge of that. I guess I'll be in charge of that. What do you think, Ross?
Well, you know, so I was just thinking the last time I did an interview, they asked me some questions and I thought that, you know, one of them was, what CPH materials do you purchase and use for confirmation class? I'm like, I don't, I have a,
exactly.
I have a master's in divinity. I do my own. Well, you don't purchase a program from CPH to use? I'm like, I buy catechisms. Like,
and where do you get your underwear?
And I was like, you know, I don't see any. Well, and then they want to know, well, what materials do you purchase for adult Bible study? I'm like, again, I don't. I write my own Bible studies based on the word and the confessions and the commentaries that I have.
8 years of school.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm using my degree.
You can do that.
But I mean, are you going to ask me next what sermons I purchased to preach? Like, I mean, I do my own stunts here, folks. Like, and then there were, and then the one that I always like is, you know, tell me something successful. And I'm like, actually the last time they asked me that, I'm like, you know, it's easy to talk about, you know, good things. Let me tell you about a time when I failed and the lesson I learned from it. And they're like,
answering this phone call,
right? Boom. But I don't know. Like, I've been asked things like, what's your leadership style? I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. Like,
what does that mean?
Well, and see, now I've got a better answer to that. Cause
what's your favorite energy drink?
What's your favorite energy drink? Jocko Discipline Go. Also in pill form. I guess because I've never sat on a
call,
I don't know what they're looking for. For me, it's a matter of, I always look at every interview I take as an opportunity to either just say what I want to say, or even as an opportunity, like when some church says, well, tell us your liturgical and contemporary worship practices. I'm like, well, this is a great opportunity for me to talk about what I think on this. And maybe they won't like my answer, but like, I always think of it as, like, why That's should I care bad. If they like me or not because of my answers? Yeah, so yeah. I'm just going to, and I'll help them figure out what kind of questions they shouldn't be asking or, you know, you know, like, what's your communion practice or do you practice closed communion? That was the one I got at this church. Do you practice closed communion? I said, my practice that means, is that, probably. But in order to do it, I actually need a church that's on board and going to support that. Because if I tell Joe Schmo they can't commune because they're a Methodist, and you get mad at me as a board of elders, then, you know, who do you really want me to practice it or not? You know, or I don't know. There's usually some sort of axe to grind in the questions that get asked, I think.
I think you're so from the last guy or something. That's good. What do you think, Paul? You're on a call committee. What kind of questions would you ask? Or tell the congregation to ask? You've been a circuit visitor. So you've guided some congregations on that matter, I'm guessing.
I'm a circuit visitor right now. Is that what it's called? Counselor visitor.
There you
visitor.
Go. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it is kind of worthless, to be honest. It's sort of, I think the crucial issues are the proclamation of the gospel. That's what you want. You want somebody who's going to be kind of hell-bent on that. And then everything else is kind of along it. I don't know, maybe,
yeah.
I mean, there's some bad pastors out there for sure. So maybe actually questions about like kind of work ethic and stuff like that might not be a bad, like to kind That's of good. Suss out. You know, are you somebody like gets after it? Do you like show up? Do you want to improve?
have you bought a new book since you graduated the seminary? Mm-hmm. You know, or are you just coasting? I remember Feuerhahn said that years ago. He said one of Dr. Feuerhahn, one of his great sadnesses was going into a former student's congregation, and there were no, he could tell what year they graduated because of the books on the shelf, you know, that yeah. they hadn't purchased anything new since. I don't know.
Those
yeah.
Are good. Those are good.
I think the questions that, like, so for a congregation, they go through an assessment of themselves first, and that's helpful. And that's actually not really helpful to place a pastor there. It's helpful for them to understand kind of who they are. And that's, it's a good opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have a pastor to shepherd there. And then you're just kind of trying to match this up, but it's all a, you know, God's actually at work here because it's a crapshoot, and it's, you know, sometimes we're shocked at what works, you know, are yeah. things that we think are perfect, and it's a train wreck. And so, I think some of those more like character issues would be important to know, like work ethic, striving to better yourself. I mean, those other issues of, I don't know, like you'll hear a bunch of dumb things like, are yeah. you missional minded? Are you,
missional, that kind of congregational, relational,
yeah,
vocational.
They're not going to be helpful, I don't think.
Can't you find a bunch of stuff on people now before you ever interview them?
For sure. Like if anyone you wants can, to call me, you? I mean, shoot, there's like,
should be enough.
There's like 8 years of sermons, blog articles where I bitch about all kinds of stuff. There's ringside. I mean, it's you've got it all there. That's
just
me.
About as much stuff written by your wife out there too. So they have everything they possibly need to know.
Well, it's funny. You know, the last interview I did, they asked me what my preaching style was, and I said, well, I don't know. I mean, I preach God's word, but if you want to see him, you can go to Facebook and see him. And one guy's like, oh yeah, I've watched a bunch of your sermons. I'm like, then why are you asking me the question? Like, you've seen him, like, you know, I'm friggin' awesome.
Because they think they're supposed to ask questions. I think they're just like, they think that's the question. I think you really nailed it. Like, I think you should ask the pastor point blank, even what you've heard them say, that should give you a good idea. If they've written a lot, they've spoken a lot. What's the gospel? What drives the ministry in your brain? Mm. I think that is huge. And then work ethic. Yeah, I think it's actually kind of practical and not, you're right about the missional. Yeah. Are you that it's all stuff they're told they're supposed to ask, I think. And they think they're supposed to be concerned about. Unfortunately, they're lay people. God bless them, but that's not their number one job. And if you don't have a good, I think circuit visitors kind of push them. Even then you're not there all the time.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on there? So
here's a question
who knows
for
what's
you.
Going on this God committee?
Maybe a background type question or something. So let's say
have you molested any children?
Oh, no.
In the last 10 years.
Here's a, yeah, no, that's a terrible question. No. how did you pay for your schooling? No, but from a, here's a pastor, more of a pastor question. So let's say you take a call and you leave a parish, you know that church. I mean, what sort of, do you give a word of guidance to your congregation that you're leaving? Do you say, hey, you guys are fine. Don't let the district come in here and screw you guys up with silly surveys and telling you you need to be vacant for years. Can you just say, hey, here's someone that would come in and fill these shoes very well. You should consider them. I mean, do you do that? Or you just say, you know what? I'm leaving. I'm taking a call. Good luck, y'all. I'll pray for you. Or is there a place of pastoral shepherding where you can say before you go, here's some closing thoughts as I leave? I don't know. I was thinking about that the other day.
I think when a pastor leaves. Yeah. Why is that, Ross? I think when a pastor leaves, he should do like an exit interview sort of thing. Like, hey, this is my thoughts about the church and your future. And then you should just get the hell out. And then, this is why I hate you. And,
this is why I'm not. This is why.
But then once
this is
you're
a great,
out,
that's a great idea.
You need to just be done and you need to step away. And because
forget
at
about
the
it.
End of the day, I was listening to you talk there. None of it matters. Like, the district can come in and this is in-house garbage for people who don't know, but the district can come in And they could say, well, we want you to be vacant, and we're going to do this, and we're going to bring in all this. And they're going to do all that, and whatever's going to happen. And guess what? When the district leaves, that church is still that same friggin' church that it was before they got there. And whatever pastor comes, he's still got to deal with all that stuff. Now, the interim time, there can be some changes made, but you're not making full bore, you know, changing the family tree of that congregation in a year. I mean, none of that's happening. So, the pastor,
especially without leadership,
but in a year, it's not going to happen. So the pastor that comes, he's going to deal with
what
was there. Mm-hmm. That's what he's got. So I think, a pastor leaving, I think it's very good practice to do kind of an exit interview to say, hey, this is how I see you guys. This is what strengths, weaknesses, whatever. If you care for my opinion, this is the kind of pastor I think would suit you well, whatever, you know, or hey, you need to get these things in line before you try to call somebody else, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then just get out.
And get out.
And let them.
Don't linger for too long either, right? Stuff. Like,
no, you don't. You shouldn't be there. You know, that's a really good, because there is some value to the honest appraisal of what's going on. But a pastor should not be. You're too close to the situation. They're going to listen too much to you sometimes if they like you. And so,
well, and
as a circuit visitor, though, I think you should be pushing people around for sure. Yeah. Like, you like this guy, I need you in my circuit, right, Paul? You love to have guys that you can trust in your circuit. That'd be awesome. And just hang out with.
Yeah, I have two vacancies that I'm putting Ross's name on.
Done.
Hey, you're the reason I got to St. Peter's. That. I mean, right? I mean, you. I got to St. Peter's because Paul was a circuit visitor.
Did you go to seminary even? Ross didn't even go to seminary
yet. You want a chap?
Yeah, man.
I would take Tyler over lots of possible experienced pastors out there. Yeah.
Well, mostly because we've molded and shaped Tyler, so we know, like,
through our community college.
Ringside Community College.
I'm close to having a community college degree.
Yeah, you're never done with it, by the way. So with Ringside Community College is always in process. You just have one more class.
Like most community college students, you're never graduating.
You could have a belt.
Because you usually get lost at the bar.
So you're just kind of lingering. And show off your different colored belt. That'd be fine. Belt
and system. In order to move up, you've got to beat a belt that's above you. There we go.
Oh.
Now we got like some
hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah. Ross's eyes lit up on that.
This could be good.
You got to roll with somebody, or you maybe a coin system too. So you get a coin and a belt and a
coins. That's right.
We're not doing our job with the bell, and it's mostly my fault. It's a little bit your fault. Okay, First Corinthians chapter 1.
We're going to talk about the Bible.
Read a little bit of it. This is going to come up here in a couple of weeks here. First Corinthians in your epistle lessons. Epistle means letter. Paul says, verse 18 of chapter 1, for the word of the cross is folly or stupid for those living in Middleburg, to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved is the power of God, because it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and the discernment of the discerning. I love this word. I use it a lot. Thwart.
It's a great word.
Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world didn't know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. Blah, 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 blah. Thoughts on that? The word of the cross is stupid for those who are perishing. Paul, what do you think? What do you like about it? What do you hate about that? What's going on there? What's he saying? What's Paul saying?
Saint Paul,
the Paul of sainthood.
Yeah, no, I this gets to the heart of, I think, for us, for, you know, the task at hand for the preaching of the word. You know, this never looks wonderful and glorious. And it is a God who continually chooses to work under the form of opposites. So he uses the lowly, the weak, the foolish, the dumb things. Basically, nobody gets to have it all figured out. It is only God, and we are receivers of that, and then we proclaim it to others. Hmm. So,
good. What do you think, Ross? Disagree?
So,
agree.
The word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. Right. So those who are outside of salvation, a cross, like, how does this guy dying abused and naked on a cross make any sense. It's stupid. It's idiotic, right? But those who know, those who have been given faith by the power of the Holy Spirit and are being saved, we don't see it as some guy dying a pointless death. We see it as the place where salvation is purchased and won, where atonement happens, where redemption happens, where God's power is on display. And it looks like nothing. Like to everybody else, it looks absolutely like pointless and stupid. And yet it is God at work redeeming his creation. And so it's the exact opposite of the wisdom of the world. The things that are can be debated. We see that God takes something that's just the world says pointless and worthless, and he does something amazing and incredible with it. And the thing that continues is he takes, you know, simple folks like us who preach this word to continue electing and saving people. You know, like every time we get up in a pulpit, good, bad, or otherwise, whether we feel like it's a good sermon or a bad sermon, God's at work in it and saving those who believe, you know, strengthening faith, you know. And you'd think, gosh, this is how God chooses to redeem his creation through, you know, Joel Hess and Paul Koch and Ross Engel and Tyler in a couple of years when he gets his MDiv from Ringside Community College. You know, this is how God continues to save people and bring salvation through that word preached. Like, that's not the plan I would have come up with, right? And so it's foolish to the world, but yet it's God's ways always beyond ours, right?
I don't think it's only foolish to the world, which is kind of interesting. This is one of those verses, I think, that changes what wisdom means throughout Scripture. Because you have wisdom in the Old Testament, and wisdom, you think of like Proverbs, you think of Psalms and things like that. Choose the right one, you're going to live. Choose the wrong one, you're going to die. But this equates the wisdom of God through foolishness, folly, which is the cross, which will take everything that we know as wisdom and fill it up with something more, which is Christ, looking back into the Old Testament.
What do you mean, so first of all, I like how Paul goes on and says, I mean, look at you idiots. What a bunch of morons. God called you. That's what I'm talking about. People are like, what? But what do you mean by the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing? Wisdom looks stupid to the world today, right? What are you saying? Say it again about the Old Testament.
It's kind of like how God renames people all the time. He, you know, says, this is who you were, and I'm going to fill it up with a little bit more. Like Christ does this all the time with his own name, Son of Man. That didn't mean anything until Christ actually was Son of Man in a way that nobody else was a Son of Man, right? So same thing with wisdom. Wisdom was something. It was, you know, righteousness, foolish, whatever, law, that kind of stuff, until Christ. And now it's the folly of the cross, which is the wisdom of God. That changes the way that we look at wisdom. We can't see it the same way that we always did.
Oh, yeah, sure. So from now on, because we see that as the pinnacle of real wisdom, now that changes how you look at general wisdom in every aspect.
And specifically God's wisdom, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty stupid.
That's why you can't read Proverbs without Christ. It's just not possible anymore.
Well, I mean, well, you can say about the whole Bible, though.
Yeah.
But yet the whole Bible points to Christ there, but...
Especially the New Testament.
Yeah.
Especially the parts in red. The red parts. Yeah. And you can't put like
all Jim, you need to do is read the red
Jim
parts,
said
right?
This doesn't make any sense. All right. Thank you, Cindy. As you're talking, I'm like, why? We should have asked you more often since we invited you on here. But I think you butt in plenty of times, but I apologize. All right. What do we got to apologize for? Who have we? 1570 Podcast Network. Let's apologize to them for being a part of their network. And go to thejaggedword.com for some great fun writing that's going on there right now. Anything we're looking up, Crafted Preaching? Is there anything going on coming up at all? Are we looking forward to? Really nothing. We need
Tyler's
a summer
wedding.
Event.
Oh, yeah.
Is that for sure, though?
Yes.
Does everybody know? Does his mom know?
I got a thing in the mail.
Yeah.
Oh
man, I haven't gotten mine yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Dang it.
Sorry, Ross. That's weird.
I'm sure it's on the way.
Must have been lost.
It's Florida, so it's, everything takes longer.
Yeah.
Who it's, have we
bathing in freedom down here?
Besides Tyler.
People have been getting them like pretty sporadically. Like I got people that sent them out 2 days later, and then like our grandma or Allison's grandma that lives like a mile down the road got it like a week later. So I don't know what's going on with those.
Sweet. I mean, I already wrote it down.
It will be the event of the year.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, live ringside, too, by the way.
During the reception. Yeah.
It's going
to
be great. Sweet.
Well, we would like to apologize for the following. I think I need to add Allison Barnes into that. Yeah, 1517, Cindy Koch, Veronica Krogan, Lori Osmond, Concordia Seminary St. Louis, Jesus Pep Talk Churches, South Park, Bob Hiller, Churches Who Get Their Ideas from Ringside, Ruth Vader Ginsburg, Community Colleges, The Thinking Fellows, Mercedes Smith, Jagged Word, People Who Haven't Been Comfortable Going to Church in a While, Tim Barquette, Gavin Newsom, Paul's Congregation, People Who Don't Defend People on Facebook, Ross's Vinkel, People Afraid of Christian Nationalists, Graham Glover, Julie Hess, Alicia Engel, Churches Who Exclusively Use CPH Materials, Pastors Who Don't Buy New Books, Churches with Pastoral Vacancies, Pastors Who Joel Would Take Me Over, Community College Students, Middleburg, Florida, The Jagged Word, 1517 Podcast.
Kingdom of Heaven's at hand, repent and believe the good news, page.